You know, modern life can be stressful for you. It certainly can be for me. And you know what? It can also be stressful for our pets. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Net as we take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Lots of things to talk about today. We can visit about separation anxiety a little bit, noise phobias. We've got the firecracker season on the way. And you can join in with your own questions or comments about your pet's health. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Dr. Sandy, welcome back.
Nice to be here, Larry.
Well, here we've got separation anxiety, which is a nasty thing to have.
It is. And, you know, I'm going through it myself right now. I have a new puppy who's about 5 months old now. And he had been adopted very early through this rescue group. And the person that was doing the foster care had four or five other dogs at home. And she took this dog with her everywhere. And so he was never left alone for the first couple of months that she had him. And and so now I get him. And you know, one of the things that I always ask owners who think that their dog may have separation anxiety is a very simple question. I know it sounds weird, but can you go to the bathroom by yourself? And they look at me like, why are you asking that? But then they suddenly go, well, no, the dog always needs to be with me in the bathroom. I can't go and close the door. Huh. That's welcome to my world right now.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, the best way not having separation anxiety is to prevent it. And so if you do get a new dog, they need to learn that the world isn't going to end if the owner isn't there. And there's a bunch of little simple things that we can do to be able to help get it under control. And
okay, what are those things?
Some of those things are having non-emotional arrivals and departures. And this is where I'm really guilty. I can walk out of the house and be like, yeah, I'm on my way to work, because usually I'm in a hurry. But the best thing you can do when you're ready to leave is not having any contact with the dog for about 30 minutes. And so, you know, try to have those 30 minutes be kind of calm and cool. You're not running around looking for, you know, your shoes or your briefcase or whatever. Mm-hmm. But have, you know, kind of plan ahead so that you can just maybe sit and meditate so that the dog isn't feeding off of your pre-house leaving anxiety. And then the same when you come home. Ignore the dog when you come home. This is where I fall down, because I've got these three dogs with their wiggly butts all greeting me at the door, and it's so hard to not go, yeah, I'm home, you missed me. Because that's what why we have our pets. If they just kind of looked at us while they're laying on the couch and big deal, you know, it'd be like, well, you don't care for me anymore. But that can aggravate it. So trying to ignore them when you walk in. And I've got to the point now where I can ignore them, but I can't go to the bathroom by myself. So they follow me in. But so that's one of the big things that you can do. And then, you know, getting the dog used to being alone, having them have a comfortable bed where they can lay down and maybe chew on something wonderful while you just step out of the room. And so they learn that even though you're in the house, you're separated, and there don't always have to be I got in trouble once for calling them Velcro dogs. I actually had the Velcro copyright people come after me, so I have to call them hook and pile fastener dogs. But they start learning some independent skills. And then beyond that, you're usually looking at getting some help from professional, whether it's a veterinarian, an applied animal behaviorist, a board-certified veterinary behaviorist. Then you're looking at drug therapy and more extensive management, where we're starting to habituate them to things like the departure cues, like picking up your keys or putting your shoes on, right down to, you know, the gradual getting out of the house, like step by step. And the big problem with dogs with severe separation anxiety is you can't leave them alone. You can maybe train them over the weekend and get them comfortable with laying on a bed while you're in another room, but then what happens Monday morning? Yeah. And you may have to look at having pet sitters or doggy daycare, that kind of thing. And so it can be a really long, drawn-out thing. So that's why I am a huge believer in prevent it before it becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we have lots of calls here about a whole variety of issues, Dr. Sandy, so I think we'll get right into it here with Jane in Oregon first. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
What can we do for you today?
I have an elderly dog. I'm not really sure how old she is because we got her at the Humane Society. She was a stray, but she's probably at least 12 or 13. Last winter, she was quite sick. They never really were sure what she had. She had the high white cell, so they gave her a strong antibiotic. She eventually recovered. But the one thing that's lingered is her bark changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely more, like, raspy.
Is her panting raspy as well when she pants?
Nope, not at all.
Oh, okay.
She doesn't cough or anything like that. But she does every so often just gag, like, no reason. Like, you know, she just... Mm-hmm. She just will have a gag reflex or whatever happened.
Yeah, there's...
She's eating perfectly fine.
Good.
Hard food, and so that's really the only thing that remained from whatever she had.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if the two are linked in any way. A very common condition that affects especially large breed older dogs is a condition called laryngeal paralysis. The vocal folds will, in some dogs, either one or both of them stop working. And instead of being able to move so that they can breathe and bark and sound normal, they're just kind of hanging in their airway. And what this predisposes dogs to is one can end up with aspiration pneumonia, and that may be why your dog was so sick. They can inhale things because they don't have that protective mechanism of those vocal cords closing off the airway. And these dogs will usually have a hoarser bark. Sometimes they'll even have, so I was asking about panting, hoarser panting. The big concern is now that we're heading into the hot, humid summer weather, is if this is what's actually going on with her, she may have some issues with being able to tolerate heat or stressful events because dogs have to pant to be able to cool off. And if those vocal cords are hanging in the way, they can pant. They don't pant effectively, and they end up becoming hyperthermic and getting more distressed, which makes them pant harder, and it can become a vicious cycle. The way we diagnose this is primarily by looking. We get the dog under a light plane of anesthesia. We use a laryngoscope, just a blade with a light on it, that we can go back and look, and we watch those vocal cords to make sure that they're moving. The reason why I like to try to get a diagnosis rather than just assuming that that's what it is that we do sometimes see dogs with tumors in that area as well that can intermittently obstruct or, you know, not allow her to be able to sound normal. So that would be the other thing to be looking for. And having that visually looked at, it's a fairly safe procedure. I mean, it's a really light anesthetic that you can, you know, just do and then let them wake up. But if she does have laryngeal paralysis and it's affecting her quality of life, there are some surgical procedures that can be done where they tie the vocal cords back. Obviously, that opens up the airway, and they're more prone to aspirating, so we have to be really careful with feeding and drinking. There is something that can be done if it comes down to that. I had a dog that had this, and it started when I was on maternity leave, and I was like, I'll just watch it. Well, I went back to work in June, of course, warm weather. He was due for some vaccines, and I took him into work. He got a little distressed in the car, first car ride in a long time, took him and walked him from the parking lot into the veterinary school, and he collapsed before I got him into the vet school. And so at home, where things were quiet and calm, he was okay. But that little bit of stress, the car ride, the walk-in, was enough to push him over the brink, and he ended up going in for emergency surgery that afternoon. So that would be my number one thought, is either a laryngeal paralysis, which she could potentially live with if as long as you're careful, or a tumor, which may not be good news.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Jane. I appreciate it very much. Bob in Waupaca is up next. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. We have a 15-year-old mixed breed, kind of a border collie. And when the dog is up and awake, wanders around aimlessly, constantly panting. His appetite is okay. He's completely deaf, can't hear. He's almost blind. his back legs are kind of weak, but he can get up and kind of walk around. And we're trying to figure out, he doesn't seem, you know, other than those symptoms, he doesn't seem like he's in any apparent physical pain, but we're trying to read what we can about, and he's not telling us exactly it's time to go, but we're trying to figure out the criteria when we make that decision. The only normal thing he's got going for him is his appetite's okay, and he also has got some incontinence. We have to leave him in the garage at night. What do you think?
You know, this is one of these things where I actually have something that I hand out to owners, and it's available online as well. It's a quality of life scale that we use. It's kind of based on the quality of life scale that is used in human hospice care. You'll find it either just Googling quality of life scale for dogs or under Journey's quality of life scale. One of our local veterinarians ended up putting it together with the word journey so that each letter stands for something. And, you know, things that we look at, yes, maybe he has a good appetite and you can give him a high score on that. But if he's not able to control his urine and feces, that's really degrading for a dog. So, you know, hygiene is, a huge thing to make sure that he's being kept clean. Mobility is something that we look at. It sounds like he is getting up, but a little wobbly on his legs, so probably not going to have a high score on that. Overall happiness, does he seem to recognize you and pay attention to you, and does he still find joy in things that when he was younger brought him joy? To give you an example, my own dog, who passed away a couple of years ago, one of the things that she loved doing beyond anything else was going for car rides. She didn't want to get out of the car. She hated the destination, but loved the car ride. And I always use that as kind of my criteria when I said, Vanna, you want to go for a car ride? And she just was like, nope, don't want to go. That was like one of my things for happiness that I kind of use. So every dog has kind of their individual happiness thing that you have to look at. Social interaction is another thing, too. So what were you about to say? Sorry.
When he's wandering around, I mean, the last caller that has that, he doesn't have any bark anymore. That's gone. He wanders around aimlessly. I mean, his mind is, dementia, whatever, it's gone, and he doesn't really recognize us. And if you startle him, he will snap.
It doesn't sound like he's real happy that way. And when we see dogs, when we see this aimless kind of wandering, it's either he has some cognitive decline or dementia. We also see dogs doing this that have brain tumors and other intracranial type damage, like a stroke or something. And so those would be, again, you have to look at all of these things, mobility and pain and hunger and, cleanliness and happiness, and put it all together and come up with your own personal decision. And sometimes ending a pet's life is not based on maybe one person may be able to cope with the changes that your dog is going through much easier. But like, imagine if your dog was in a home with young children who would startle the dog and maybe get snapped at. That may be a deciding factor. So sometimes it comes down to environmental factors, your ability to provide the care for him. But I have to tell you, from what you're describing, it doesn't sound like your dog has a great quality of life right now. And I think it's very wise of you to be looking into this. It's going to be the hardest decision you'll ever have to make. But the relief that you feel afterwards when, you've been struggling with making this decision, and no one would fault you for, doing it now. If you called your veterinarian and told them exactly what you're telling me, no one would fault you at all for doing it too soon. And I live by the motto of, I'd rather end a pet's life a week too early than let them suffer one day too long. And right now, I don't think he sounds like a happy dog.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Bob.
All right.
Thank you so much for calling. And it was a good question that a lot of people have. Everybody listening to this show.
And I've been through this as well. Have I done it too soon? Am I doing it too late? You see that maybe a little glimmer once in a while where they are lucid, and then they're back to being, not social anymore. It's a really tough thing, but it's the best gift we can give them.
Let's turn to Sandy and Hubertus next. Hi, Sandy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I recently, 5 weeks ago, adopted a dog through Haws, which is a wonderful organization. And my dog is about a year old, and I'm struggling with the Lyme disease prevention. My goal is to hike the entire Ice Age Trail, so I named my dog Glacier, but I don't want to talk, you know, anything toxic like the shots. I'm just so confused as to what to do.
Well, it's not just Lyme disease that we're worried about in this state. In fact, if you look at Lyme disease in people, I think the statistics are like if a human gets exposed to a Lyme-infected tick, about 90% of us will become symptomatic, versus in dogs, it's about 5%. It's a very low number of dogs actually develop clinical signs of Lyme disease. But we still want to prevent it because it can be very debilitating, even though it doesn't affect a high percentage of dogs. But the other tick diseases that we get concerned about, things like anaplasmosis, which can affect cell counts and so on, and can make them lethargic and febrile, like Lyme disease. And then, you know, Ehrlichia is another one that we're starting to see more of in our state as well. So combination of all those things, I think you really need to be looking at your dog needs tick control. And whether you vaccinate for Lyme disease or not, your dog needs tick control because you're going to be in tick areas and there are so many safe products that you can use out there. Everything from oral tablets now. There's one called NexGard, another one called Bravecto that's given every 3 months, and a new one that's called Simparica that is given monthly like the NexGard. Very safe, extremely effective, no okay. External chemical residue. You are going to pay a little bit more than you are for some of the top things. One of the other things that I really like for owners that are concerned about putting chemicals on their back, like some of the spot-ons, are there's a collar called the Seresto collar that the Bear Company makes.
And it lasts, I have one.
Okay, it lasts for 8 months. If they're in the water a lot, you want to replace it every 5 months. But they are extremely effective for ticks and fleas. So
can you do both the NexGard and the Seresto collar?
You wouldn't need to. It's okay. One or the other would be adequate. So I
okay,
would not
I have
be,
the collar.
Yeah, I would just stay with that. That's a great thing to consider using. But again, when it comes to vaccinating for Lyme disease, I think it's one of those lifestyle vaccines that we have to look at. And even though tick control agents that we have now currently on the market are very effective, they are not 100% effective. And deer ticks, being as small as they are when they're in those early stages and they are feeding on dogs, you may miss seeing a tick on your dog. But I think when you're out in the on your hiking trail, that'll be a good evening project for you, is spend a half hour going from nose to tail on your dog looking for ticks and getting them off, because the disease is don't get transmitted right away, even though they may already be feeding. So if you can get them off early, that's going to be great.
Good luck and have fun on your journey, Sandy. Appreciate it very much. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On all things political, a political correspondent with the National Journal will join Kathleen Dunn to talk about the latest news in the presidential race ahead of Tuesday's primaries. That's coming up at 1 o'clock, I believe, here on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, we're talking about your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Always great to have her along. And we have an open line. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. I always look forward to the photos we get, the pet photos, on our Facebook page. So if you've got a photo of your pet, I hope you'll post it up on The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page, The Larry Mueller Show. In the meantime, let's go to Jim in St. Francis. Jim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to find out from the doctor, if possible, when a cat loses somebody, does she take to hiding?
Cats can become quite distressed if they lose a companion, whether that be human or another animal that they've become.
Actually, she's lost two in the last year.
Yeah. And so, you know, and that we see that fairly commonly where just, a change like that where maybe the other pet, whether it be a dog or a cat, is kind of the outgoing one and they're the more shy, introverted, but the other one kind of clears the way for things. So that may be what's going on. I always recommend making sure that if there is a behavior change, that you rule out whether there's any health concerns that could be making the pet not want to be social with you and be hiding in the closet.
She's using the litter box fine, and she eats.
Okay.
But she just goes and hides, and once in a while she'll let us pet her.
Mm-hmm.
But it's completely different than what she used to be.
Yeah, so getting a physical exam, I think, would be a good idea, just to make sure that there's nothing painful that's bothering her. Cats are so good at masking signs of illness that, we're sometimes very surprised. We'll see a cat that looks normal on the outside, and it's like, oh, my goodness, you've got a nasty heart murmur or something. So
yeah, we had a cat that had diabetes and went blind.
Yeah, and so that's...
And that was, yeah. That was she lost.
Yeah, and so there you go. I mean, there's a serious disease like diabetes, and people don't see the signs of it, and they can get it. You know, the pet can get into trouble. But get her checked out. And other things that you may want to consider, one would be getting a feel-away diffuser. It's a facial pheromone, a synthetic version of it, that makes cats comfortable and relaxed, so they become a little more outgoing, and that may be helpful. Really think about, and I don't recommend going out and getting another cat, because often cats they may have been bonded with one cat, but adding in a brand new one could really backfire for you. But if you ever consider doing that, make sure that you keep them separate and a very slow, gradual introduction, and realize that you may be still living with the cat in the closet and the other one happily, in the rest of the house.
We inherited this cat from a lady who passed away. And when we first got her, she hid in the closet all the time. Now she's reverted back to that. She's hiding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of changes in her life. I mean, there are anti-anxiety drugs and things like that we can use. One of the things that I have had some really good success with lately is there are several products on the market that use a milk-based protein, and you can buy them over the counter and go online or whatever and get them through online pharmacies. They're non-prescription. There's one that's called Soliquin that is made by the Nutramax company, and it's in a little chewable. It's like a little chew, and I've had some cats that have like travel anxiety do really well on those. It's not going to sedate her. It just has a calming agent. And that may make her feel just a little less anxious and maybe want to come out and socialize a bit more.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. And Jay, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, I have a pit bull. And about a month ago, I noticed that one of his eyes is kind of sunk in a little bit, and his pupils are different sizes. Like, one's a lot bigger than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked it up online, and it said, sometimes he can hit his head on things, and it can cause some type of nerve damage, but it should eventually go away. But it's been over a month now, and it doesn't seem to be changing. So I was wondering if he could kind of give me some advice on that.
Yeah, is the pupil on the sunken eye smaller than the one on the normal eye?
Yes.
Okay. My guess is that your dog has a condition called Horner's syndrome. It's a nerve problem that can cause the eye to sink back in the socket, the pupil to be smaller, and you'll also see that third eyelid coming up a little bit too. Because the eye is sunk back. So we'll see this, and that nerve actually originates down in the neck. It sounds weird, but it's a nerve that starts way down at the base of the neck, runs up the neck, past the middle ear cavity and past the ear and then goes to the eye. And anywhere along that path, we can see damage. So if they've had a neck injury, they've got a middle ear infection, then, you know, those would be things that potentially could be treated. But sometimes we'll see this just happen spontaneously, and we just call it idiopathic Horner syndrome, where we don't know what caused it. I do recommend having your dog checked out, because if it is something like an ear infection, you may be able to get your dog back to being normal again. Know that even if it, you know, they can't find an answer, this is not painful. It's cosmetically unpleasant because, you know, the dog looks different and the eye is sunken and so on. But it's not uncomfortable for the dog if it's not associated with either a neck issue or an ear problem.
Hmm. Okay. And then it's something, if it's, yeah, I think he clipped his, he was coming in inside and he kind of clipped the side of his head on the door.
Mm-hmm.
So is this something that will eventually go away, or is it...
It may or may not. It really depends on how much nerve damage was done. And so sometimes it can go away, but it's the fact that it's been there for a month and not improving, I really doubt that it's probably going to get any better. But I still recommend that you consider going in and having your dog looked at, just to make sure that there isn't anything obvious going on, like a slipped disc or an ear infection that could potentially be causing this.
Okay. Good luck, Jay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Corey in Oshkosh, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hello.
What can
thanks
we do
for taking
you?
My call.
You bet. What can we do for you?
I have a young lab that's going to be 4 this month, and generally no health issues. He has a annual checkup scheduled in a couple weeks, but what I noticed just in the last couple of weeks, he developed a cough only when he's excited. He eats normal, drinks normal. He can bark normally, but when he gets excited, he coughs.
Is he coughing anything
like
up?
When he had kennel cough, it's exactly what it's like, but it's only when he gets excited. You know, and I was just curious, like I said, we have a checkup coming, and I was just curious if you have any thoughts on things we might be able to talk to the vet about, any ideas on what might be.
Well, it could be just about anything, because when they get excited, their heart rate goes up, their respiratory rate goes up, and that could be the trigger for this. And, it, you know, just because it's not happening spontaneously when he's resting doesn't mean that it may not be anything serious. So I think maybe consider moving up that not so well wellness appointment and having this looked at. First thing your veterinarian will do is do a head-to-toe physical examination, palpating lymph nodes, looking in the mouth, auscultating the chest, listening to the heart, palpating pulses, listening to the lung fields. But even with doing that, we're often at a point where we have to jump to the next level and get some other diagnostic work done, such as getting a chest x-ray done to see what the lung fields and the heart shadow looks like as well. They may want to do a little blood work to look for things like heartworm disease, which, you know, may with exercise can start coughing with that as well. So hopefully your dog is on heartworm preventative. And so it's unlikely, because I mean, we have heartworm in this area. We're starting to see it in some of our wild canids that are, you know, very urbanized, like our Madison coyote population. Some of the dogs or the coyotes that they're trapping and testing are coming back heartworm positive. So we know we have a reservoir here for it. So keeping your dog on year-round heartworm control is important. But I think this would be something that, even though your dog seems to be feeling good in all other respects, I would be getting them in. It's not going away. It needs to be looked at. Hopefully it is, you know, nothing more than maybe another bout of kennel cough, which can sometimes last for 2-3+ weeks. That's for your veterinarian to determine after they've had a look at your dog.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. All right. Thank you for your tips.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Corey. Appreciate it. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Our guest, Larry Mueller, here with our producer, Jill Nadeau. And thank you for listening in. We have most of our lines filled. Now they're all filled, but here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Christy in northern Wisconsin has a comment for us, so let's go there. Hi, Christy.
Hello, everyone. Just a quick 2-minute story about separation anxiety, since that was Dr. Sandy's subject today. I got a dog at 4 months and have never dealt with this before with dogs, and she had that problem. So I had her in the dog crate, and we did pretty well with that, although she didn't want to go in there. Also dealt with fear aggression with her, so I did see a couple specialists about both of these subjects. And one thing led to another. After about 13 months, my sister's lab died, and she said, "Do you want this dog bed?" And previous to this, I wasn't putting anything in her kennel because she didn't seem to want anything in there. Mm-hmm. I said, "Sure, I'll take it." And I put that dog bed in the kennel along with a blanket. And about 2 weeks after that, she was in her kennel 10 minutes before I left in the morning.
Oh, my goodness. And, oh,
yeah, you know, it was like, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe that it was something this simple that's all she wanted was a little more comfort in there.
Uh-huh. I had a family that moved into a new house, and they had a dog that was so used to, in their old house, having a crate. It was like that was its comfort zone. But realize that a crate is not the cure for a dog with separation anxiety. They can develop. I've seen dogs that are very anxious being left alone, and the owners, rather than having their house destroyed, woodwork scratched, things chewed up, and so on, they'll put their dog in a crate. I've had dogs break nails, break teeth off, get their head wedged through the door, you know, really traumatize themselves because you've put that anxiety in a box. So I'm glad that you found something that would be comforting for your dog. That was a very easy fix. It doesn't happen like that all the time, but I'm glad that worked for you.
Yeah, for sure.
And this is basically, you know, this is a 3-month process. So like 14 months, she was great with going in the crate. And then prior to that, so everyone understands that I did go through that with my dog, and I did leave her out for a short period of time, which I thought, but it was 2 hours, and it was 2 hours too long. And, you know, that cost me $700 at Melazini at the emergency animal clinic there, although I did have dog insurance.
Yeah.
So that really saved me. But, you know, but what this really led up to is the last 3 or 4 months, I let her out for like a half an hour, and she did great. She just matured. She just came of age. She's 3 years old, mm-hmm. and she's fine. I leave the dog crate. She actually goes in there in the morning. I don't close it.
Yep.
And we have our routine, and she's perfectly fine. I can leave her for 8 hours. So there's a light at the end of these tunnels.
Good, good. But you can see how long it's taken you to get to that point. One, just to talk about the cost of damage, one of my colleagues at work adopted a cute little dog named Gideon, and Gideon has separation anxiety. They tried crating the dog. The dog just panicked in the crate. They tried just blocking the dog into the kitchen, and he's a tiny thing, and he managed to get out, and so they ended up locking him in the bathroom, thinking, okay, we'll put you in the bathroom, and he turned on the faucet in the bathroom and pushed down on the stopper in the sink, flooded their bathroom. It flowed down into the apartment down below them. $5,000 later of bathroom repairs and all the carpeting that he had torn up in his other episodes before they started locking him in the bathroom, they still have a dog with separation anxiety and an empty checkbook. So this can be a very expensive behavior problem to deal with. That's why you got to prevent it if you can. So
thanks. Yeah, thanks for that. Telling us your experiences. It sounds that it worked.
I'm very happy for her. Yeah,
but it won't always.
No.
There we go. Oh man, Tracy in Green Bay is our next caller. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, I apologize. I joined the show and learned, you know, that it was the animal call-in show, and I didn't realize it was a separation anxiety show. So I apologize because my question doesn't really have to do with that.
Well, that's all right. We're talking about all kinds of things today.
Okay. Well, I have a dog and 2 cats, and my question is about my elderly kitty. She'll be 17 on Thursday. She's in pretty good shape other than she has hyperthyroidism and is stable on her medication for that. What I'm wondering is, we recently bought a fifth wheel, and we travel a fair amount in that.
You know what? We're losing you totally. But
the question was about sedating her for travel.
Yeah.
I tend to try to avoid sedation if at all possible for these kitties, just because they can have a much longer recovery period and so on. If she is comfortable in the crate, I would make sure that you introduce a crate slowly, maybe just have the lower half out in the room, and then gradually, have it become a fixture in your house. Feed her in it, give her treats in it, then put the lid on it without the door, add the door on, and eventually have her be comfortable with being in her crate. A previous caller that was talking about wanting, something that they could use for their dog, and I mentioned this product called Soliquin by Nutramax. There's another one called Zilkeen, which is a milk-based protein. There's some over-the-counter natural calmatives that I call the beer, tea, and turkey treatment. They usually have hops, chamomile, and tryptophan are sometimes the main ingredients, and those can be fairly safe and easy to use. I would probably not go with anything prescription, but try some of these other things that are going to be less problematic for the cat.
There we go. Thanks, Tracy. I'm sorry we couldn't keep you on, but the phone line kind of went dead on us. Dave and Deerfield, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
I have a 10-year-old curly-coated retriever and good physical shape, but periodically, almost once a day, feel like he's clearing his throat and getting in a vomiting position, and he'll do this horsey cough type of thing, and he'll do it two or three times in that one period, and then it's over with.
Okay.
And he's been doing it probably, I'm going to say the last 6 months. And I can't say it's every day because we're not around all the time. But I'm just curious. We thought maybe it's food, so he switched some food and went back to his regular food, and he still does it.
Have you taken him to your veterinarian yet?
No, we haven't.
That would be my first thing, okay? I think he needs to be looked at. He's an older dog. He's coughing. It sounds like, he needs to have a good head-to-toe physical exam, may need to get some chest x-rays done to be able to get an answer. There are so many reasons for dogs to make sounds like this. From, one of our earlier callers was asking about laryngeal paralysis in her dog that can cause this type of hacking, coughing type thing if they aspirate even a little bit of their saliva, to things like heartworm disease. I had a dog in recently with primary lung tumors, and he was coughing like crazy. So sometimes, it's horrible stuff, and other times it's really easy stuff that we can deal with. But the only way you're going to know is to be seen by your veterinarian and expect to have a little bit of workup done.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thanks, Dave. Mindy in Reedsburg, we'll get to you in just a minute. Just a quick reminder to you as you're listening in. Have a question about your pet's health, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. You can go to our Facebook page, and we'll be talking in just a minute about the great photos that are already up there. Post a photo of your pet along with your question. We'd love to have that as well. And, of course, always call 1-800-642-1234. Larry Mueller with Sandy Sawchuk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network as we take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Always a pleasure to have her come by. And we're having a lot of fun. Sandy and I were looking at the posts on our Facebook page. And Sandy,
I know, though. A friend of mine named Arlene posted a picture of two of her bulldogs. Earlier in the show, I mentioned one of my former bulldogs, Vanna. Vanna was a dog that I adopted from Arlene and had her for years, and she was just the love of my life. But these are a couple of her new dogs. Aren't they beautiful?
They really are.
There's a beagle that has a broken toe and a skin infection and is looking quite sad, but hopefully he'll be able to be up and running soon. A little mini dachshund that looks like he's just enjoying snuggling in the blankets, as they all do. And then the best one of all is this a dog named Buckley that's all dressed up in a tuxedo for his 15th birthday. I'm just like, oh.
He's a Beagle Jack Russell.
Yes. Oh, isn't that adorable? Now, if I put clothes like that on any of my dogs, they would hate me forever.
Well, that is a cute, cute dog for sure. Well, you can go to our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Love to have you go there. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming shows, by the way. And in the meantime, while we're waiting for more photos to show up on our Facebook page, let's go to Mindy in Reedsburg. Hi, Mindy.
Hi. I have a cat that's about 15 years old, give or take. It was a stray that we took in. And he vomits after eating his food, and it's not all the time. I've pegged it down to about every 3 days, and I've tried soft food, dry food, changing food, which we did gradually, and he still just seems to vomit every 3 days.
Yeah.
Now, when we first found him, the vet figured he was approximately 2-3 years old. I didn't realize he had a hankering for Pine Sol water. And when I was cleaning, he drank it twice. And we had to take him to the vet, and they gave him, like, fluids to flush it out. Now, I don't know if this is something haunting him from his past or something new.
Yeah, very unlikely. If he had enough irritation to his GI tract way back when you first got him, you would have seen some symptoms long before now. But when I hear of a 15-year-old cat with intermittent vomiting, there are a whole host of things that could potentially be causing this. Everything from kidney disease, which can cause some upset tummy as well, even though it's the kidneys. When we start seeing some of these kidney toxin levels building up, it can affect the stomach and make the stomach upset. To diseases like hyperthyroidism, where their thyroid gland is overactive and they may vomit with that. To even severe heart disease can cause vomiting. And other primary gastrointestinal problems, even things like chronic pancreatitis, which presents very differently in cats than it does in dogs. So, being a 15-year-old, it's time to, go in for a head-to-toe physical and then expect to have some blood work done. And if you can have your cat come in with a full bladder, that's always really helpful. And so maybe putting him in his kennel an hour or two before your appointment, one, so he can be calm, and two, to allow his bladder to fill up a little bit. That way they can collect a sterile urine sample, and that will help with doing any of the diagnostics. But I think those are all things that are going to have to be looked into. So some blood work and a good physical and a urinalysis is in order.
There we go.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Mindy.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Appreciate the call. We have Judy in Rice Lake next. Hi, Judy. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I have a miniature schnauzer. It's a male. He's about 20 months old. Very, very social, very well-behaved. But I have this one friend's house that we go to, and he marks in the house.
Oh,
just
I
one place.
Nowhere else.
I assume
nowhere else.
He's neutered, correct?
He is, correct.
He is neutered. Okay. Even neutered dogs will urine mark. And they urine mark for if they're anxious or if there is some kind of stressful, like if there's another dog present or has been another dog present. It may even be a neighbor's dog that they can hear, see, or smell that could be triggering this as well. One of the things that you may want to look into, if this is just a single time that he does this, is consider getting one of these belly bands for him. If you just Google belly bands, all it is like a diaper for a male dog. It's a band that goes around so that if they do lift their leg, at least it gets sucked up into a pad is not going to be there. But keeping him on a short leash when he's there, I think, is really important. I mean,
she does have a female dog.
Uh-huh.
But they are good friends. They play and play and play and play outside.
Mm-hmm.
Before I even enter her house, I make sure he empties his bladder. But we can go to other friends' house who have
either male or female dogs of the same age.
And, yeah, and it's, you know, it's individual social interactions that yeah. can trigger this. And I mean, we see this, and I wish I could tell you why that dog is triggering your dog to urine Mark, but whether it's, you know, even though they're getting along, whether he's just a little socially anxious and he feels like he's got to mark his territory, that, you know, I have no idea. But, you know, making, you know, that's, you know, either they play outside or, you know, you just to maintain your friendship, you keep him from being able to urinate on things. I don't think it's a serious enough problem to be looking at doing a lot of behavior modification or medical management or anything like that. But I seriously consider getting one of those belly bands. Dogs find them not that uncomfortable.
There we go. Good luck. Thanks, Judy. Thanks for calling. That is a strange one, isn't it?
It is.
It's that one place.
But what it is, you know, and we always, this, you know, watching these dogs and trying to figure out what the trigger is so difficult sometimes. But, you know, at least it's only one house and not her own. And yeah.
There you go. The next call is from Monica in Brown Deer. Let's go to her. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I have to say I love the show and I've been listening for years and this is my first call. But we had an extreme version of the anxiety for my dog or adopted dog, as well as a dog-cat intro. Mm-hmm. But I thought they were unusual solutions, so I should share.
Okay.
We have such a happy garden of animals now. So I had adopted my dog, who's half husky, half beagle, from a family who had had her. She was already 7, but they were leaving the country, and they wanted to give directly to a person who at least knew who she was.
Okay.
So that's how that happened. And but even though I did that, you know, go out the door for 1 minute and come back, to allay the anxiety thing, and then in 5 minutes, but it didn't really work, and I had to leave, and I found out from the neighbors that she barked for 2 hours until she dropped. So I looked and looked for solutions, and this is also where I found your book, Sandy. I went to the Humane Society, and on the shelf, they had a product, Homeopet Anti-Anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Which was drops that was really easy to give her. So I gave her that. It wasn't enough. And what we found from the manager of our local pet store was take a favorite thing, a treat, especially also add in something she never got otherwise. So we got some fresh meat bones from the butcher. But peanut butter, she loved peanut butter. And it said, put several peanut butter, and the real thing, I smear them on the inside of the milk jars, and that she has to look out all around the house, that she wants to go and search and kind of keep her in one place where while you're doing it, and so she can kind of see. And,
and that is
what really... help.
And what's that called is when we're dealing with dogs with separation anxiety, one of the tools we use is called a bridging tool, which means you give the dog something that will keep them busy and occupied when you're getting ready to leave. So that, you know, as you're getting ready in those that 30 minutes where you're ignoring the dog, you can give them something just before you leave that's going to keep them occupied. And sometimes if we can just get through those first 5, 10, 15, 30 minutes by keeping the dog busy, like using a foodstuff toy with peanut butter or frozen canned dog food or something, that is often enough to get the dog just then emotionally becomes calmer. And with mild cases, that may be all it takes. But you did one of the things that we do, like giving the dog something to keep them occupied. And I'm glad you were able to find that peanut butter worked. It doesn't always help if you give them something and they associate that with you going out the door and they're really anxious. They may go, oh, as soon as I see that toy, that means I'm going to be left alone. So, you know, it's one of those things that you can introduce while you're at home, but you step away from the dog so they start learning that you will come back while I'm chewing on this. So it's a nice, safe bridging tool.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. Thank you so much for calling, Monica.
Sorry, we had to introduce her to the cat, and the first time, even with the slow in different rooms, it was like the cartoon where the dog thought, oh, this is something to eat, and the cats were all hunched with hissing and scratching her nose, and
Yeah.
And so, of course, we had to not have that. So what I did was that positive conditioning I got also, like an expensive cat little food, regular food, that any time they sort of even saw each other, oh, look, so-and-so's, you know, by name,
yep.
Here, sweet treat, and
yep.
got them closer and closer till they had to be, they only got it when they were within arm span, you know, one hand.
Oh,
here,
one well,
hand
good. There. It sounds like you have a happy family now, and what you did was counter-conditioned. So what you're doing, all the things that we do when we're dealing with behavior problems.
Yeah, that was good. That's exactly what you talk about and Dr. Patricia McConnell has talked about.
Right, right.
Thanks, Monica. I appreciate that call very much. I want to just take a look on our Facebook page. And Mary sent us a photo of her 11-year-old yellow lab, Maze. She had the paralyzed larynx and had to go on April 8th.
Oh.
University Vet School diagnosed her at Christmas time, so we got a few months
yeah.
after that.
Oh, what a beautiful. Look at that white face. But, you know, you'll have those memories all the time, and it's so wonderful to have photos of our old pets like that.
Oh, great photos. Oh, here's another photo from Emily of my little cat, Vanna, found as a stray.
It looks like some kind of like a Siamese mix. And boy, the cat's got a real comfortable bed there.
Really
so.
Comfortable.
Oh, and a guinea pig.
Oh, man. We're, oh, and look at there.
Oh, bearded dragon. I think that's
on
a bearded dragon.
On top of Teresa's
yeah.
head.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, we'll talk some more about those photos and answer your questions after we take a quick look at the news. You stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network as we take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. Questions, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. More fun is to go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. Post a photo and a question there. Or call. We'd love to have you call, too, at 1-800-642-1234. And let's turn to Mary from La Crosse, who's on the phone. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I actually am calling about my daughter's dogs in Georgia. My daughter and her husband have always been longtime dog lovers. They had a Great Dane for many years. And while they had the Great Dane, they got another rescue dog. And the Great Dane lived about 10 years before they had to put him to sleep. And then right away, my son-in-law brought home a Weimaraner puppy. And so Alex, the one that was left, was about 5 at the time. And oh, no, maybe only like 3, because the Weimaraner, about a year and a half ago, developed seizures. And unfortunately, it was really, really bad, and they probably spent more money on medication and the dog being hospitalized and couldn't control the seizures. And last weekend they got the call from the vet in the hospital that there simply wasn't anything more they can do, so they had to put the Weimaraner, 5-year-old Weimaraner, to sleep. So that leaves Alex at home, who for the first time now is without a pet, without a friend dog. And when I talked to my daughter last night, I asked how Alex was doing, and she said, well, he's real clingy, and he whines. And I wondered, instead of having the dog cremated, what should they have done? Should they have let Alex see the the Weimaraner and sniff the Weimaraner when he was deceased?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I, to be honest with you, I don't know. I've done a lot of home euthanasias where there's been other pets around, and sometimes their behavior is very surprising. Like they go and sniff and then turn their back and walk away, and others will lay next to the dog's remains. Some of them just couldn't even care less. They're like, hey, we got a visitor here. You know, I don't care if you're euthanizing my housemate. But so it can be all over the place. And I just think that this rescue dog probably doesn't know life by itself. And we don't know what it went through the first few years of its life. But it sounds like it's always had a canine companion. And this might be a dog that would do really well at doggy daycare or, you know, going over to a neighbor's house that has another dog so that they, you know, can have some play and some fun with other dogs if it is social that way. But if it's really down in the dumps, I mean, this may be something that the dog may need some medical management to help get over this. And there are prescription drugs that we use. Often they're either like a tricyclic antidepressant like clomipramine, or we'll sometimes use serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Things like Prozac, fluoxetine are used. And some of these dogs do require being on some type of an anti-anxiety drug just to kind of get them bridge that gap so they can start learning some coping skills. I'm very sorry for your daughter's loss and son-in-law's loss, but it's common when you've got more than one pet to have them grieve the loss of a pet.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Mary. I appreciate your call. We had Tom on Facebook say that his 11-year-old dog has a torn ACL. His vet recommended surgery. She's moving well with a slight limp. Her pain meds ended Sunday. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this is something to be thinking about. I don't know what breed the dog is, and I hate to say, because age is not a disease, but an 11-year-old dog could go on to live for much longer. And, you know, this is going to become a chronic issue for the dog where they'll be developing some pretty serious arthritis in that knee. And it's, you know, if your dog is normal weight, has limited exercise, you may be able to, perhaps if it was a partial ACL tear, get by with just rest and anti-inflammatories, but she may need to be on medication all the time. And typically the long-term medications we use are the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like Prevacox and Rimadyl, and there's several on the market, joint supplements, glucosamine, chondroitin sulfate, and MSN, and all these other ones. There's a bunch of them out there. The one that I like and I use is called Dazoquin Advanced, and that would be something you can get from your veterinarian or online as well. There are some companies that market custom-made braces for dogs that have ACLs that owners don't want to have surgery done to repair. And I've not had good success with them, but that would be something that you may want to consider looking into.
Okay, there we go. And Bernice emailed to say she really wanted to give her children the opportunity to love and care for a dog, but is nervous about the whole process. Are there resources you would recommend for new dog owners with children?
Yeah, you know, and whenever you get a dog in a family, it has to be for the entire family. So, Bernice, I hope that this would be something that you want, because a lot of the responsibility is going to be put on you, regardless of how old your children are. I think that, you know, when you're looking at age of children, younger than six, you can't expect much from them. You know, as they get a little bit older, they can take on some of the responsibilities, but you still need to have an adult there. When it comes to, you know, resources, one of my favorite books, which is actually How to Introduce a Dog to Your Child, is called, it's by Brian Kilcommons, How Childproofing Your Dog is what it's called. But the back half of the book is Dogproofing Your Child. And that might be a nice little paperback. It's kind of an oldie but a goodie, but it gives you some good information as to how to, you know, get your kids comfortable with a dog as well. But it's, like I said, if you're hesitant, then obviously this would be something that I would not be recommending. You may want to be looking at getting one of the pocket pets type things, like a guinea pig or something like that, for your family to enjoy. And they can make wonderful pets, but not have the same restrictions that a dog is going to have on your time and energy.
Carlton in Elroy up next. Hi, Carlton.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Sandy. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 3-year-old short-haired or smooth coat collie. And we always take her canoeing with us. She's a good girl, lays in a canoe and just takes a nap most of the time. We have a life personal flotation device on her. And so never been an option that we're opportunity where we had to test it. Memorial Day weekend, we were canoeing up at Mirror Lake and got on the west end of the lake and got to a dock where we were just going to have a picnic. And so I got out of the canoe, up on the dock, doing fine. Looked down at all the duckweed that was in the lake, and I don't know if she was thinking it was grass or whatever, and took a jump in. Sunk like a rock, got her by the collar, back of her neck, and pulled her up onto the dock the best we could, and looked like a drowned rat. Felt sorry for her. But my wife waded out in the muck and pulled her back in. Once we got her back out, she was coughing for about 5 minutes.
Oh, boy.
She had some water in her lungs, but she worked that out, and really not too worried about pneumonia or anything yet. But we had the life vest off of her at the time because it was a warm day then. And I'm just trying to get an idea of what we can do to get her used to the water. And, we take her out all the time, and we'll keep the vest on her from now on. But is there a way of training a dog to get used to the water?
Oh, I wish. A lot of it's breed related. I mean, collies are herding dogs, and you know, they don't do much herding of ducks and stuff like that. So I it may be breed related. I remember when I used to live in Fond du Lac on a little lake called Lake de Neveu, and I had basset hounds at that point in my life who just physically, with their short little legs and log body, made swimming almost impossible for them. And one of them put their front feet on the boat and back feet on the dock, and a wave hit and down they went. And I did exactly the same thing as your wife did, jumped in, clothes and all, to have to get this dog out. So we had the rule that if the dogs were out on the lake side of the house, they had to have their life jackets on. And, they did get comfortable wading in the water. And if a wave hit them, they had some buoyancy and they weren't afraid. But I'm really worried that your dog, with having that type of a traumatic response to going in the water, is going to be really afraid to swim and may just panic, even though they may not be sinking with the life jacket on. So, you know, starting small near shore, that may be the, you know, your best bet to get the dog comfortable with being out in the water. But I really, there are no swimming lessons for dogs.
No.
It's one of those things that it's kind of, they know how to do it and they don't. Yeah.
She wasn't excited about getting in a bathtub clean up. That's
I bet. Well, good luck with that, Carlton. I hope you get to train her somehow to swim.
Yeah. I have a life jacket for my dog, for one of my dogs, and I'm going to probably have to get another one. But it's just friends invite us out on boats, and the dog that likes to go and is social, let's say, that makes me feel more comfortable if we're away from shore. So even a dog that's a really good swimmer, if you're out in the middle of the lake, that could be the end of them if they can't make it to shore.
Barbara in Greendale, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I have an 18-month-old Bernese Mountain Dog who we adopted him at 9 months old. He had some neurological problems that we had worked up at UW, and they found nothing major, just some minor things. But his major behavioral problem is that he vocalizes for several hours a day or night while we're up, and he's like a baby that you try different things to find out why they're crying. And there's usually, we haven't been able to solve it yet. Nothing seems to comfort him. Hmm. It's almost like he's just talking to us.
Okay.
But it's disturbing because he'll increase in volume, he'll bark and then whine and then, you know, do it again. So I was wondering if you have any ideas.
How is his obedience training? Does he know how to sit, stay, and down, stay, that kind of thing? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard for a dog to get a good bark out when their fanny's on the ground. And so I would be trying to, you know, instead of paying attention to the dog and reinforcing it by maybe like, what's the matter, you poor baby? You know, just pull out some of your obedience stuff. And when they bark, you know, okay, sit down, stay, you know, and just be very matter of fact about it. If there's nothing physically wrong with the dog and they're just doing it as an attention getting thing, then, you know, giving them attention, but having it be a job where they have to do something for you. That would be one of the suggestions that I would make. But there has to be a time when the dog is quiet for some reason, and that's the time to pay attention to the dog. So when they're just not doing anything, that's when you can give them treats, you know, pat them on the head, say what a good dog they are. If it's, you know, if just like this nuisance noise, you may want to consider one of the bark devices that are out there that may help stop the dog from making unwanted noises. Obviously, that's not going to give you, you know, stop the reason for it. But the one that I would be recommending would be like the citronella bark collar, which just gives the dog a little spritz of citronella. It's when the dog makes the noise, it's not based on you making the dog stop. The dog doesn't like the smell, the feel, the sound of the citronella spray going by their neck and by their face. And then when the dog is quiet, that's when you can pay attention to them. So I think it's maybe just changing your behavior with the dog a little bit, and maybe introducing one of these devices may help, especially since they've got a clean bill of health.
There we go.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Barbara. Appreciate your call. And let's see. We have Michelle posted on Facebook that her dog has a broken back tooth. The vet suggested having it removed, but she doesn't seem to be affected by it, and she does check it regularly. Should what do you recommend?
Well, if we have a broken tooth, there's kind of a couple of different things that could happen. One, sometimes it's just the enamel is damaged and it's not actually into the pulp chamber that has the artery, vein, and nerve and so on, that can result in pretty serious infection. Dogs are masters of hiding pain, and I can't tell you how often I get a dog in where I'll look open their mouth and I'll see asymmetrical tartar buildup. On one side, there's lots of tartar on a tooth that may look like it's a little fractured, and then the other side looks cleaner. And so that tells me that the dog is chewing on one side and not the other. And so they adjust their behavior to avoid some of the discomfort. Remember, dogs, unlike us, I mean, we like to get flowers and sympathy cards when we're hurting and painful, and we like people to pay attention to us. But dogs know that if I show signs of pain, I'm going to be someone's lunch. I mean, that's just natural preservation response. So if the tooth is broken, if the pulp cavity is exposed, and sometimes the only way you can tell is to anesthetize the dog and either x-ray the tooth or at least physically evaluate the tooth, the dog is probably in pain. If that pulp cavity is opened up, that dog is uncomfortable and that tooth should be evaluated. So
there we go.
I agree with her veterinarian.
Yep. David and Slinger, your turn. Hi, David.
Hi. You may have partly answered my question. We have an almost 2-year-old Labradoodle who is a great dog, but he's very nervous. The least little thing will set him off. If he sees another dog, he'll start barking. But if he gets close enough to that dog, he's really there to play and is quite happy to take him out at night, and he just barks like crazy to scare everybody away. At least that's my theory. Some people have suggested a bark collar, but I'm concerned that with an anxious dog, a bark collar might make him more anxious. Same thing for like an invisible fence. So I just what's your thoughts on the barking?
Yeah, dealing with the anxiety, I think, is going to be the big thing. And you may need to work with an applied animal behaviorist to be able to get this dog comfortable with walking on a leash and seeing a dog at a distance. And it may come down to having a therapy dog that is going to be, that's not going to bark back at your dog, that you can have set up situations where you take your dog for a walk as the dog, as the other dog is approaching. If you start noticing anything, like your dog starting to get a little anxious, you have them sit, stay, look at you. That's where a head collar sometimes is really helpful, one of the gentle leader collars. And, you know, have this dog learn that when I'm a little anxious about something, I turn and look for help from my owner. And that way the dog starts developing some a kind of a security that nothing bad's going to happen. Often, you're right, the dog, it's the anxious dog that is doing that barking. It's not that they're trying to protect you, but they're trying to keep the boogeyman away. And so I really question whether a collar is the right thing, because that may, yes, it may control the barking, but it's not going to deal with the underlying cause of the barking. Now, if it's just a dog that's kind of a nuisance barker, that, hey, there's birds flying overhead or a leaf blew across the yard or whatever, then the collars, like the citronella collar, would be very appropriate. But I think you need to get to the bottom of this, and it sounds like your dog could probably use some help.
Yep, there we go.
Same way with the invisible fence?
Yeah, invisible fences, remember, the fence systems that are out there all use, pretty much all use a shock system. And they, you know, there are some dogs that just, they can't tolerate them. I had one client who put in an invisible fence, and the dog went out, and they, during the training, got a shock, and the dog just learned grass is bad. I can't walk on grass. And for the dog to even get out of their house, they'd have to go into the garage, put the dog in the car, back the dog out of the driveway, and then walk in the street. They would not put their feet on grass. And it took months to get this dog being able to be back in their backyard again. It was like a one-time learner. So they're not perfect. I always recommend, if you're going to be using one of the electronic containment systems, that you work with one of the professional companies so that you have a well-skilled trainer there to be able to help you. Usually they're guaranteed, and they're going to be able to, if it's not working right for your dog, you can get your money back, or most of your money back. So rather than try to install one and do it all like homeschooling, work with a professional if you're going to go that path.
We had somebody call once about fences, and I may have told you this story before, but the collar will beep to warn the dog when it gets close to the, you know, to getting a shot. A shock, I should say, and the person got it all set up. The dog got shocked a couple times, and then the dog just walked up until it started beeping the collar, and then it just sat down. And it waited, and once the battery died, it ran across.
Yeah, and I've had some owners that have dogs with really strong prey drive that they grit their teeth, they get through it because they know it's worth it on the other side, but then they don't want to come home because they're not as motivated to come back in the yard because there's nothing good there. So you have to pick and choose the dogs that you use it for, and you know, for some dogs it works great, and others, they're too smart for their own good.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you for the laugh and the advice.
I had another friend who had installed one, and then he had a riding lawnmower, and the dog would get up, you know, always wanted to ride with him on the riding lawnmower. Well, he's riding a lawn mowing the lawn, and the dog is yipping every once in a while, and then he realized, oh, I've still got the shock collar. Every time he got close to the edge.
Yeah. I want to just mention really quickly, there's a new product on the market called Cilio, S-I-L-E-O. It is an oral gel that is a medication that is used for treating noise phobias. And it appears to be a very effective. It's available by prescription from your veterinarian, and with noisy times like 4th of July coming up, this may be just the ticket for people to have. So,
sorry, we should have talked more about that.
That's okay. It's called Cilio, S-I-L-E-O. It's dexmedetomidine oral mucosal gel. And I'm really excited to see that that's on the market.
Oh, so, that's wonderful.
Yeah, you can use it even after the dog starts to become anxious. It will start working versus other medications you have to give before they become anxious or they don't work. So this is something that I think is going to really change the way we deal with a lot of dogs with noise phobias.
Sandy, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk will be back in about a month. And we'll do this all over again. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.